Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. Today I'm actually doing a crossover podcast. I want to share with you a podcast that's a little different than LedgerCast. It's called Tulips FM. You can go to tulips.fm to check it out and subscribe. It's on iTunes and Google Play and Spotify and all that. And this is a bit of a roundtable podcast that I'm doing with some friends. It's more of just a weekly conversation of what we're looking at in the markets right now. One of the things about it is it's not exclusive to crypto. We trade crypto and equities markets and Forex, and it's just about the market in general. In the one that I'm posting today, we actually talk about crypto for the first half hour, so it's pretty relevant for the crypto audience, but there might be weeks where we only talk about stocks or only talk about a Forex trade or something. This is with a group of folks that I talk to pretty often. Some of them you'll know from crypto Twitter. A couple of them have been on my podcast for LedgerCast. It's Johnny Moe, Psycho on Wall Street, Crypto Canvas, and you'll recognize some other folks as well. They're a fun group of guys. I think that you'll enjoy this podcast, and I just wanted to post it on here to let you know that it's something that I'm doing in addition to LedgerCast, and I hope that you'll subscribe to it. This is the only one that I'll do the cross post on, but I did want to let you know that it exists. All right, with that, I'll send you over to the Tulips FM podcast. Hello and welcome to Tulips FM. I'm Ledger Status, or Brian Krogsgaard. I am joined by Johnny Moe and Canvas. Hey guys.
How's it going, Brian? Hey, Brian.
It's going well. Hey, we recorded last week but didn't post it because the audio went to crap. So this week we're simplifying our setup, and hopefully this one will actually get out to the world. We haven't forgotten about this podcast. We've actually talked about it way more than we should each week, but nevertheless, this is technically episode 2, and we're going to talk about some markets. What do y'all want to start with? Stocks or crypto? Vote with your voice.
Canby, you take it.
Gosh, I'd rather talk about crypto because I don't really care about equities right now.
All right. Well, we'll talk equities because I have some stuff to talk about, but let's go ahead and talk crypto. All of us are trading it more actively than we were when episode 1 of this show came out. So, Canby, why don't you start and give me your thesis for why crypto is tradable right now?
It sounds silly saying this, but I feel like volatility is back. And it sounds silly because the last few days have been so awful for volatility. The last couple of weeks almost, maybe not that long. I don't know. But it does feel like, you know, it's a tradable environment.
There's something in the air.
Majors. Yeah, majors. You're seeing Bitcoin move around, Ethereum, Litecoin, and we're starting to see some setups and shit coins too. Right, Johnny?
Yeah, I just moved funds over to Binance for the first time in probably, I don't know, a year.
For a setup we're gonna note makes no sense whatsoever to me or Canvas.
I got a little excited about Red Pulse Phoenix. And, you know, it's not my proudest moment, but we'll see how it plays out here.
Yeah, so you moved funds over to for a Momo buy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, basically what's going on is obviously BNB has been moving for a while, but we've seen Ravencoin take off recently, and we've seen Engine, ENJ, take off recently. And I'm not the type of person that likes to just accumulate all these, this huge bag of 10 or 15 or 20 altcoins, but I like to take things like Raven and Engine, and if they're going to give additional legs, I like to buy that leg in and out really quick. And that's kind of why I jumped in Phoenix, is it looked like maybe this was leg one of something big here. So we'll see if it gets a leg two. But that's the general thesis, is that we might see singular coins start popping off. And if they do, I'm going to try and catch portions of them.
Nice. Yeah. So let's start, I guess, with BNB, because I think it's led a lot of the frenzy around people thinking altcoins are going to do something. Plus, well, generally, Bitcoin hasn't been crapping itself, which gives a little bit of room for other coins to do something. Binance, relative to Bitcoin, both made an all-time high and is up about 225% from its lows of the past year or so. Relative to the US dollar, it's not at an all-time high, but like it's got this trajectory like it might want to do that. It's no sure thing because it's like totally parabolic versus Bitcoin. But if we see an all-time high relative to the dollar, especially, to me, that is like, that's a big statement. And it would have to go to $25. It's at $13 right now. But like on a dollar basis, this weekly looks, I mean, it's wild. It went down to $4 at the very low. And so it's whatever, you know, like 4X almost relative to the dollar. So that's a significant move with a whole lot of volume. And I guess Binance, part of this is coming from them hosting ICOs on their platform. Like it just feels so 2017 to me. Have y'all felt this way?
2017, I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but clearly I think we're set up to see some things start running. So if things are going to run,
just the fact that like something's running because they're hosting an ICO and they're like selling out these ICOs in 5 minutes and stuff. It's not that I think that we're going to repeat 2017. I just think that there's energy in the market that reminds me of some of the 2017 action. Maybe not like the December, January stuff, but you know, like earlier in 2017 or even like early, like say spring 2018, when there was a tease of a lot of action. So we don't know if this will just resolve down, spike hard. It's just a big bear market rally in altcoins or the altcoin market cap. But there's stuff happening. I mean, we've seen other coins go up like 50% in a day. Lots of them. Some of these are pretty news driven as well.
What's the short version? Like, I'm not up on Binance and Binance Coin and all that. Like, why? If you explain this to somebody who's not up on it, like, why is BNB running?
Yeah,
so all you need to know is that it is not a security and does not represent Binance equity.
Of course.
So I would argue there is a lot of utility to the Binance token. I don't think that makes it not a security though. So Binance is the highest volume exchange. It's where every altcoin dreams to be traded at because of the liquidity there. And the Binance team is paid in BNB. They're completely unbanked. They don't use dollars in their ecosystem, to my knowledge, at all. So they're like a crypto beast. Like they're just made fully in crypto. They run in crypto, and the Binance token is what powers all of that. Like their employees are paid in BNB, and there are trade pairs on BNB, and there are burns of BNB for some reason, which I think is actually probably what gives it the security label more than other things. But now they're doing these ICOs where you have to buy the ICO in BNB, so it's very ETH-like. ETH-like in terms of you needed Ethereum to buy an ICO, and they're propping up these ICOs to a bunch of newbie-ish buyers, making them available to anyone, and they're selling out in like 5 minutes. And they're saying they're doing fundamental screenings on those ICOs. So people are buying BNB to then buy, you know, whatever ICOs have launched. The BitTorrent token was one, and then Fetch was another one. We actually interviewed the Fetch CTO last year on the Ledger Status podcast, so it's just interesting what they're doing.
On Ledger, I think he tweeted something about like the most bearish thing in crypto right now to you is just the elevated market caps of some of these coins, and this just feels like, I mean, to me, it feels like it's too early for this shit to be happening, right? If this is what's driving the BNB, you know, appreciation, like, I just don't think the market's had time to recover and where we can go on some kind of ICO frenzy. I really question, I guess, the sustainability. If this is what's going to be driving like alt season or the end of the bear market, it's a little, I don't know, I'm not sure if I buy it yet.
I don't know that it has to drive an alt season or has to drive the end of the bear market. I do think it's what's driven this BNB run. And I think what has legs is once people start making significant gains, like these, you know, 2-3-4x type of gains, they don't really pull, that doesn't create contraction in ecosystem, because typically people roll those profits into something that hasn't pumped, and you create these cyclical runs like Johnny's talking about, like one-off something here or there popping because of news or whatever. And I think you're finally bringing money back into the alts ecosystem rather than taking it out, rather than this just constant contraction and drag on the market. So I think that even though like maybe Binance runs its course for the most part, like, I don't know if it'll just keep finding new all-time highs or whatever. Maybe it ran its course and those profits flow into something else. But Binance kind of leads the way. The same way back in the day, Ethereum had that huge run up to $400, and that like kicked off the boom for everything else, right?
Yeah. So I guess my position is that I have a hard time seeing new money entering the market. And to me, there's a difference between new money and fresh capital, right? Like the guys who've stuck it out and who are still holding those bags and like true believers, they can add fresh capital. But the guy who got completely wrecked and left, and him telling his friend who's never touched crypto to come into the market, like I don't see those guys re-entering yet.
Could this be, let's call it new capital versus new people, right? So any of us can be putting new capital in.
Yeah, so I would just like try to differentiate that. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that this is, to me, it's new or fresh capital rather than, you know, new entrants.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to be like a brand new retail driven crazy bull market. I'm just saying there could be life in the market, and maybe that lifts.
No, it's interesting for sure. So I'm just trying to think about what are the long-term or mid-term implications of this. Do we just go like sideways and we see different alts popping off for, you know, a while until the market gains more confidence? Or do we see just like a brief run and then return of the bear? Or, you know, I don't know what it means, but it's definitely something to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think Johnny's good evidence here, right? So he's bringing new capital to that market today. Like he was enticed enough to say, I want to go after some of these momentum moves, and he's fuel to that fire. But he's not a new entrant. It's not like you're convincing him to be a participant in crypto markets. He was just trading CHOP in Bitcoin and Ethereum, right, Johnny?
It was basically staring at this Bitcoin and Ethereum nonsense over the last week or so, where it's just kind of been in these flaggish sideways patterns in these channels, not doing anything. And that's really hard to trade on leverage, wind up just chopping yourself out unless you just hold through it. But meanwhile, while that's happening, you start looking at some of these altcoins and got things like Ravencoin and BNB and ENJ all making huge runs. And you don't need to catch the bottoms of these coins to make money off them when they start going. I think, what did you say? I think ENJ is like 4x or something now from the bottom.
Yeah.
I mean, catch a 10 or 20% move. There's no reason you have to catch a 2x or something like that for it to be worth your time.
Yeah. And I think what I'm seeing on some stuff, like some of the ones I'm interested in, is they've got a 8 or 10% spike that puts them decidedly over their 50-day moving average or over their 200-day moving average, or they're having a 5200 cross or something that indicates they're making a, you know, higher lows, bringing in some volume and potentially have some momentum. But then there's some resistance level that's a good ways overhead, whether that's 20%, like Johnny just said, or 100%. And to me, those are the attractive plays. If I can get more out of that, then I feel like I can get trying to swing trade Bitcoin or Ethereum. The caveat of all this is making some general assumption that Bitcoin is not going to like dump off to 1800. And I think as people gain confidence that, you know, 3K or somewhere in the 3Ks was there's support there, like we're building liquidity there for people to go buy dips when they happen, and they're not going to get stuck in some kind of position in an altcoin or whatever, that it gives people confidence in the market and we see some sort of normalcy. Because what we've been in is a year of totally broken altcoin markets. Like they're just broken and dead. And that's what that bleed out is. It's just gradual capitulation and stuff, right?
Yeah. I agree. I don't think, you know, we're seeing any kind. I mean, let me rephrase what I was going to say. We may be seeing some kind of a macro bottom, but I don't think we have bottom. This bottoming will be a process for many more months still, potentially for all of 2019. I don't think this is like people quickly need to dive back into crypto or they're going to miss out. This is going to be a long time. But throughout that process, there's pretty good potential that we see some of these altcoins make really big moves one at a time.
Yeah. So I'll talk about one that I participated in actually through my kids. The reason I personally didn't is because I really wanted to play on margin with leverage, and I couldn't do that with Litecoin. But my kids had a spot position. They don't margin trade like smart people. So they basically went all in on Litecoin based on a pattern trade and higher lows. And there was a lot of disbelief when I was trying to talk about this trade. And to me, Litecoin's been a pretty good weather vane for crypto more broadly. And on a Bitcoin relative basis, I mean, it topped in the 0.02-ish range at the beginning of 2018, and it just bled and bled and bled. But it made some moves on the daily and weekly chart. There was a inverse head and shoulders that I think is roughly when I was getting into it with them, and also these moving average crossovers, and they kind of scaled in and took profit along the way, and then scaled back in as it retraced. And man, it had a heck of a move overall, to where from a Bitcoin basis, it roughly doubled, like went up about 115% bottom to top. But even playing, like if you got in it after it crossed, say, the 200-day moving average, even from there, it went up like 70%. So that's just a spot trade with an altcoin. It's not a 10x or anything, but it's a significant gain relative to Bitcoin. And to me, I think that's enough of a weather vane for the rest of the market to say that there's some potential moves out there. So I found that very encouraging. And when you combine, you know, Litecoin and BNB, and then some of these smaller ones. So we mentioned Engine or ENJ, but there were a couple other ones. I don't remember what they were. Those were centered around Samsung and HTC both were talking about crypto features within their phones. So that was news driven stuff that caused them to have serious pumps, and I think that's what we'll continue to see. So I
find you talked about the disbelief on Twitter when you were posting about going into Litecoin a few weeks ago, and that whole Twitter sentiment has been amazing to watch, where,
yeah,
you know, almost all of 2018, as price just continues to get crushed, you had people refusing to believe that price was going to keep going down. And that was the biggest sentiment on Twitter, was, oh my God, if you're selling here, what are you doing? All of a sudden in 2019, it's completely flipped, where the sentiment is, you're buying now, what are you doing? You're going to get crushed. We're going down to $1,000.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I was so encouraged by the sentiment on Litecoin specifically, because everybody gave up on the Litecoin as a testnet idea and all that stuff, and it just rampaged. It's been great. It's really been leading the big cap. Time will tell if Bitcoin will follow that. I've been looking, trying to find out what's going to happen. Yeah, Canvas, you were saying?
We talked about Litecoin on last week's episode that didn't end up getting aired. And you pretty much convinced me that chart was just so bullish, and I didn't end up pulling the trigger until it broke out of that pennant. And so I'm still long Litecoin versus Bitcoin at like 1330, and I'm still holding. I think it's going higher. I hope it's going higher. But for me, it's been super interesting watching Litecoin kind of lead the way for the large caps. And it's hard to not draw parallels between where Litecoin was in like mid-January and where Bitcoin is now. In terms of, if you look at the Litecoin chart, it popped up through resistance, came back down and chilled on that spike. Resistance turned support for, gosh, multiple days, if not a week, week and a half before it started finally moving out. And then it had that big, big move. And I feel like that's where Bitcoin is sitting right now. Is, you know, it's not quite as obvious. Obviously, you don't have the hindsight for it right now, but it's definitely there, where it looks like, you know, we've shared charts on that where it's sitting on that old resistance now looking like support, and the 50 and the 100 moving averages like kind of down there catching, holding that price there too. So, I mean, it's kind of one of the things that keeps giving me hope that we're going to see at least another leg higher.
Yeah. Johnny has been talking about the 20-day moving average, which is also the 20-day moving average is the middle band on Bollinger Bands. And so I put the 20 on my like regular SMA little mix. So I've got the 20, 50, and 200 on all of them. And since I've done that, I've also been looking at these weekly charts. And man, the Bollinger Band midline, aka the 20-week moving average, is crazy. Like Litecoin, Litecoin's big move up tackled the Bollinger Band midline, so it's above the 20-week moving average, and it's tapping the top band right now. But along your same lines, Bitcoin and Ethereum, that's essentially what they're battling right now. Bitcoin hasn't touched it yet, so I actually think that's basically my target for a Bitcoin trade. Is an initial target up there to around 4,200. Ethereum's sitting against its 20-week moving average and B-band's midline right this moment. So my play on Ethereum is an assumption that now this is its third week into that midline, that it has a good chance of jumping above it and pulling a Litecoin. But yeah, like there's just stuff like that in the market that I really, really like. And that's what I'm watching.
I've never paid a huge amount of attention to the 20 or the or B bands on Ethereum and Litecoin, because typically I'm charting Bitcoin and just using Ethereum as kind of like a leveraged Bitcoin, where I know it's going to move further, but tends to move in the exact same direction. But the 20 on Bitcoin and the Bollinger Bands in general on Bitcoin on the daily, all through 2018, just every single one of those bounces before we finally broke 6,000, it was like flawless. The man knew what he was doing when he made those bands.
Shout out John Bollinger, our hero. And the weekly 20 too. I mean, on the way up, the weekly 20 was perfect. Like wick tip support on like the big July 2017 dump to 1,800 and then the September dump to 3,000. I mean, to the dollar, it looks like it, the 20 week was just perfect support. So if you could algorithmically buy when that touched, like you were rocking. And it has similarly been fantastic resistance. Even in that multi-month consolidation in 2018, it faked out above the 20 week once and then like crashed against the 50 week and went down. But then like every other test on the upper side of the consolidation of 2018 failed the Bollinger Band midline. And when we compressed so tightly to where we had no volatility in the 6,400 range, it remained below the midline of Bollinger Bands before it just died. And now it's done this thing that on a weekly Bollinger Band basis looks like it's essentially a like a double bottom and is ready to go into that midline, see what happens. So I definitely think if we get all the way to 4,200, it's a place to be quite cautious with Bitcoin until we get there. Say that again.
You're basing that on the 20 week moving average, right?
That's right. The 20 week moving average, aka the 4,200, which is also the Bollinger Band midline. I'm looking for that to be fully tested, and until it's rejected off of that, I find there to be significant opportunities elsewhere in the market.
But that moving average is, you know, it's moving down every week, right? It moved down 130, 40 bucks last week, and
correct.
And it's going to be grinding lower and lower here.
Yep.
And it's going to be squeezing price between the 200 week moving average. So it's definitely going to be interesting, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how much longer can we consolidate in this narrowing range?
Well, I drew something yesterday and put it on Twitter.
Oh, please, yeah. God, not.
You talking about my volatility squeeze?
I hope we're not talking about that. But yeah,
you don't like it?
I just laughed.
Okay. Well, the thesis was...
No, I mean,
was,
yeah, I get it. It's just a cute little picture.
Yeah, but the thesis was the same as what I've said before, which is, to me, until we either break above the 200-day moving average or below the 200-week moving average, in my opinion, we haven't made any real decisions. And
sure.
4,200 is basically right in the middle of those things, which is that Bollinger Band midline. And I just think we're going to chop ourselves to death. until we resolve some of that. And I think it could literally take most of this year. I hope that that's not the case, but I think it could take that entire time. That doesn't mean we can't like jump above that Bollinger Band midline and have some volatility, go hit 4,600 or 5K or something. But I feel like we got to resolve one of those, and then we'll find out how terrible this bear market. Like if we go below that 200 week moving average decidedly, I think that that's like really, really bad for Bitcoin and obviously the broader market. So I think we're going to lead to some kind of decision point, and we could have a whole nother year just like last year where you have this massive consolidation where a lot of nothing happens and we just talk about this every week.
Yeah, and I think what'll be interesting is one of the things that'll be interesting is that with these altcoins, you know, at least most of them severely bottomed, at least respective to their past levels, and some of them now starting to make runs, does that buoy the price of Bitcoin? Because as much as, you know, Bitcoin maximalists hate to admit this, pretty much Bitcoin's number one utility, at least today, is buying altcoins. It's speculation.
Right.
So, if that's going to happen, that's a pretty good reason to believe that the price of Bitcoin will be sustained for now, at least.
Yeah, I agree. And also the 2018 contraction, altcoins basically bled through that. So my question was, for the 2019 version, if that happens, does it mean alts will continue to bleed? And actually, my theory is probably not. I think most maybe will just keep going sideways. But I think it does give room for these pop-offs like we've been talking about, because overall, I think we've already had just such enormous contraction in the market that they're down 90 to 99% off their all-time highs. Teams are dying, running out of funding, going out of business. ICOs can't sustain anymore. Some of those will continue to die off, but I think actually a majority of that contraction probably happened in the last consolidation. So in this consolidation, it may actually present altcoin opportunity, and it could be kind of a glorious reversal as that altcoin opportunity buoys Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin not dying gives opportunity in altcoins and actually gives you a chance for the market to accumulate and have specific opportunities like you were talking about, Johnny. That's my theory. Until the 200 week breaks down, I'm going to stick to it. Should we move on to some traditional legacy market stuff?
Let's do it.
Do it. All right. Let's. Canvas made fun of me when I was talking about the dollar in our unpublished episode last week. But dang, the dollar has been rampaging. So I'm curious, Canvas. You said that you've been watching it this week. Have you been trading it at all? Do you have thoughts about it? What do you think? Right. The dollar.
I wasn't making fun of you, Ledger. I never do that. But
maybe it was gold that you're making fun of me about.
Definitely gold. I usually watch the dollar a lot, but it's been relatively boring, and it's been caught in this range between 95.50 and 97.60 ish. But that's narrowing, and we did see a nice rip yesterday. I caught some of it via Euro USD, not as much as I would have liked. But I mean, I just pulled up the chart, and what a beautiful rejection off that same exact level. I think we're going through it, which is kind of crazy, because you've got, I saw something today with Charlie, however you say his name, posting all his I love the stuff he posts, because it's never opinionated and it's just straight facts. And I saw something this morning about payrolls data, the market's now pricing in a 25% chance of a rate cut this year. And stuff like that starts flowing, squashing around. You've got a more dovish leaning Fed, but you still have seen almost no weakness in the dollar, which is not what you'd expect, right?
Yeah, you would have expected harder move down. It only went to high 95s, which was also, for what it's worth. Yeah. It retested the 200 day was close, and it was also drilled the 200 week and got bought up quickly.
I saw a Twitter take on this that the reason is because everybody is in such bad shape that the dollar isn't losing ground against anyone because everything's bad.
Yeah. Yep. The dollar is the worst thing to put your money in,
or the cleanest dirty shirt, and whatever. But yeah, and we talked about this last week, and I don't know, I think it could be also like U.S. equities are doing well and money's flowing into that, so there's demand for the dollar. I don't know, it could be a number of things. I'm really not a huge macro guy, but it's interesting because it's not,
I think it gives reason for why both of them look healthy relative to global markets, is that both the dollar and U.S. equities are kind of your best bad thing to go into. Pattern wise, I think there's a couple of things that I find interesting about the dollar. One is, depending on how you look at it, I think it's forming a multi-year rising wedge that could just as well break up as down. And I think it'd be really fascinating. Like, what if the dollar goes to 100 plus? That would be wild. And then there, you could look at it as maybe a inverse head and shoulder-y type of thing. Although I think that's becoming less likely the more that it shapes up. Either way, I was pretty dollar bearish last year, but I've become more dollar bullish, especially like Johnny said, in light of kind of other places in the world and what they've got going on. Once it gets over, if it really breaks above 97.75, with a weekly close above any of these prior weekly closes, it would be really the first time since mid 2017 where it hit those levels and actually could run up to 100. And that would be potentially bad for markets. So I hear from macro professionals.
Oh my gosh. I totally disagree, but whatever.
We've talked about equities more broadly, and y'all were pretty bullish. I think you mostly still are, but we have seen them start to roll over a bit. The weekly is engulfing the past 2 weeks at least on the SPY, S&P. Have y'all changed your tune at all? Are you taking profits on your current positioning, looking for shorts, or are you looking at this as a dip that you want to buy? What do you see here? Let's start with Johnny on that one.
Short term, absolutely. I think we're going through a dip, and I covered my long positions and got short, and probably going to hold short through at least next week and see where we're at. But I mean, that was just since the day after Christmas, that was just an insane rip. We got to take some off at some point. And maybe we won't, because we've got everyone thinking that we absolutely will. And so it won't give people a chance, and we'll just continue ripping. But for now, I'm short at least a week. We'll see where we're at.
Yeah, I've been looking at some levels. The 2018 open, so the S&P top on SPY at least was around 282. The 2018 open was around 267, and the 2019 open was around 252. So the 252, the 2019 open would also be a 0.618 retrace. However, if this is going to be like a big giant inverse head and shoulders, like a lot of people have pointed to, that would be well below where a right shoulder should go. A right shoulder would be closer to like a 0.382 retrace, or like between 260 and maybe like 267 for a better looking right shoulder. But that's why it interests me to think if it could retrace all the way back to the 2019 open, do like a full 0.618 retrace, ruin everyone's hopes and dreams on the inverse head and shoulder. That's my macro outlook, is actually that we could get all the way back to like 252 on SPY before it has like major buying levels. Do y'all think I'm crazy in that? Too much of a dip or too much of a dip?
Yep. I think it's a buying opportunity. I don't think V bottoms need to form head and shoulder reversals. I think the V bottom is the reversal.
So you think we just consolidate somewhere up here?
Yeah, we either consolidate or everyone gets surprised and we start pushing higher next week.
Ooh. See, just looking at this weekly candle, dude, it's hard to imagine this without any follow through on another weekly.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's hard to imagine maybe, but the volume isn't great either. It's not like it's a big volume sell off.
Yeah. Johnny, you're about to say something.
Oh, we'll see.
No, I was just going to say that I think Canvas has a good point. I mean, that's probably the way the most people would get messed up right now, is everyone is trying to say that the stock market's overdone. You see very little people that are like, nope, got plenty to go. So a lot of people are probably assuming that, hey, we're going to pull back to something and I'm going to try and take advantage of that pullback. So if it just didn't pull back, a lot of people would be either, you know, in trouble either through shorts or just through opportunity loss of not being long.
Johnny, I just heard your tensor alert go off in the background.
Which way are we going?
It's making me just like, It makes me want to moan.
Bitcoin's moving.
It's moving, baby.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Over 3,900. Look at that.
If you take that overnight high, it would be fantastic.
Ethereum's really popping if you want to see something fun right now.
Oh, God.
Oh,
open
my
your
gosh.
Ledger.
I'm so highly leveraged right now that this makes me feel good.
Welcome to the family. I've been highly leveraged all week, and you heard me on Telegram. I just kept adding Litecoin. Like, I was banging your kids' bags.
Yeah, you really were. I was like, my kids were selling their Litecoin, and
I was
Canvas
buying
was
all
buying
of
it.
And I didn't care, and I'm so glad I did, because
I have to say,
so I'm glad you guys brought that up, because we didn't talk about that when we were talking about the crypto portion. But that's my number one concern right now, is I don't think you guys are the only ones that are highly leveraged long right now. I think a lot of people are highly leveraged long, and I think
this applies to all markets, don't you think? Like, you think the traditional markets are pretty leveraged too?
Well, you look at when we recorded the first episode of this, we had just gotten done with that, you know, death spike because everybody had gotten over leveraged. So does that mean that macro, we're going to go to new lows? Absolutely not. But does that mean that if we start moving down, that we're going to see a lot of stops get? Probably. So, hey, maybe we just keep going up. But the fact that everyone is highly leveraged long right now, or at least everyone I talk to, is a little scary. Yeah,
I think that's a fair concern.
I'm not worried about it. I'm not at all.
That's the worry, Cambist.
Oh, but
he's complacent.
We got complacent
Cambist on the line.
Yeah, but Johnny, your sample size, the people that you talk to are very different from the general market makeup. So I don't think you can really, you know, look at what I'm saying or Ledger's saying and say, oh, this is the market.
Well, and the other thing I'm looking at, and you and I debated this a little bit over the last week, is
open interest.
The Bitfinex Ethereum longs are all-time high levels. They've never
That's
been this
all-time
high
open interest or yep. all-time high percentage?
All-time high longs.
And that's number of Ethereum or U.S. dollar value?
Number of Ethereum. So granted, Ethereum is down in price. I haven't done math on what it is compared to when Ethereum was $900,000. But from an Ethereum perspective, never in the history of Bitfinex providing margin have this many Ethereum been borrowed to long.
Yeah, but to Ledger's point, Ethereum's what, a tenth of the price was back in the bull run, so I'm not sure that whole lot.
And that's fair. Maybe that's what I'm overlooking, and maybe that's why it'll be fine, and we'll just march on up.
Did you read my blog post, Johnny? Be honest.
I skimmed it.
Yeah.
I didn't go every capital period, but you know.
I think your response in Telegram was the chart is the chart, sideways face.
Yeah. I'm glad you remembered that, Brian.
So the TLDR on that is that in the bull run, or even before the bear market was, you know, the writing was on the wall for most, and it was super obvious that we were in a bear market. There was an instance where, you know, we were at similar levels of open interest for Ethereum, and multiple times we went higher, and that open interest was quote unquote resolved, if you will, as price moved higher. People took off their long positions. And I think we could see the same thing. I mean, we can definitely see the same thing here. I think the argument I would make at this point is that either open interest works as an indicator different ways in bull markets and bear markets, or it doesn't work at all. And so if you subscribe to the first, the saying that it works in a bull market or bear market, but it works differently and depending on what you are in, then you have to consider, are we still in a bear market? I don't have the answer for that, but it certainly feels like we're not in the bear market we were a couple months ago.
Yeah. I mean, people that are over leveraged long only get in trouble if people start selling, right? So if we don't start seeing selling, then they don't get in trouble.
Once the selling starts, it's
going to be bad with where the levels are at right now.
So I was talking to you about this, Johnny, and I'll express for listeners as well. But I think the best comparison we have to this Bitfinex long short data is in traditional markets, futures markets, you have the COT data, or like commitment of traders. And when you look at commitment of traders, say in an oil trade or, you know, S&P futures, or I think it's especially interesting in things that are produced. So like coffee or something, they have producers versus speculators. So producers being the people that make the coffee, and they may want to hedge their positioning to guarantee their profit margins or something. Whereas the speculators are obviously doing it because they think it's going to go up or down. We don't have that as well. It's not as well defined for us, but generally I think our producers would be like our miners. And I don't think miners are to a point where they're like gonna hedge. So like I think they're probably happy to be long here because the market is depressed. Whereas speculators, I think therefore they can get it, they can be right even if it's too lopsided, because like the producers are also like not content with this price. And I think if there was more of a divergence between those two things, maybe it would matter more that it's so overweight. But anyway, that's just my two cents. Is like sometimes when you look at that COT data, speculators can be right for a while, and it can be like an overweight trade where they're right. And then you just, at some point, they become wrong and it flops sideways. You can look at what it was like the natural gas versus oil pair trade that went on for so long. Like that was super lopsided and people made a lot of money with it until they blew up, right? And I think we can do that too. So I think it can be overweight long Ethereum for a while, but maybe when it hits, I don't know, $250, maybe it people get like hyper long, and that's when there's an opportunity to squeeze them short.
Yeah, when you look back on the chart at these long and short levels, it's real easy to point out in hindsight where they peaked and where the values were. But when you try to do it in a in the future, you have no idea where to call these tops.
Yeah, and by the way, our happiness is limited here. We've already started to retrace, but it's okay. I believe.
I mean, there's some thick offers overhead, so it's going to take some time to chew through it if it's going to go that way. So
it's just a retest of the breakout, guys. I promise.
Exactly. And look, it's low volume, right?
Yeah. All right. So back to the traditional markets. Did y'all have anything else to add? I know y'all were playing a lot of individual names and stuff. Did you have anything that you wanted to bring up, like any look or trade that you were especially interested in? Something that caught your fancy? No. You were.
I mean, I've been long on like, Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook was ripping for you. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, obviously, I wish I'd taken profits two days ago. And I, you know, in hindsight, yeah, that would have been great. But I'm mostly playing it via calls that expire on March 22nd. And still up on those. Took some, you know, a hit today and yesterday. But today, I mean, holy crap, it's almost recovered the full drop today. Nice daily candle at this point.
Yeah.
I've got some other random stuff, but nothing I really love right now. It's hard to fall in love with, you know, anything at this point. I did buy some Goldman calls yesterday, which was kind of out of my wheelhouse, but I liked it.
Nice.
It's interesting to see banks holding up today, right?
Yeah, financials seem to be in their own world sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, well, and a lot of people say, you know, financials are a barometer for the general market conditions, and it's just interesting to see those holding well today. Up overall, right?
Yeah.
At least individual names. I'm not sure what the like the ETFs look like. Again, it's probably why we're not going to see a big dip in the major indices, but you know,
I have a theory for. I think there'll be a little bit more drawdown than you expect. I tend to agree, even though I don't like it. Because I'd be motivated to see the market move down in rapid succession. But I think that consolidation is more likely. It's hard for me to think that sellers, like options sellers especially, are gonna get caught offsides twice in like 6 months in a big way. I'd be very surprised by that. So I think that especially derivatives products are probably going to be pretty well priced so that they don't get stuck sideways. But that's my only real reasoning to think that there could probably be consolidation for like multiple months before there's a significant move.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it's, you know, it's similar to like crypto markets. We could see the indices consolidating while all individual names continue to pop.
So I agree with you. I think there's probably going to be some pretty good opportunities in the mid caps and small caps on the stock side of things while we figure out what's going to happen. Of course, if it all dumps to crap, I will be pleased as someone very, very down on my options that I've purchased, and resolution before summer would be very good for me to bring those back to life. And out of the market, I'm out of the market for the most part from even my longer term stuff. Therefore, I do not want to see the market go up. So if Mr. Market knows that, if I'm not alone in that type of positioning, then I think either the sideways or up is the logical way to continue to screw over someone like me. So that'll probably be what happens. Nevertheless, why don't we end it there this week, and we'll come back and figure out if any of our calls this week were correct. I don't know that we made any big calls, but maybe that push to the Bollinger Band midline on Bitcoin, we'll see if that's resolved by next week. All right, so on behalf of Cambist and Johnny, we will catch y'all next time. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you later. Hey, rate us on iTunes and all that kind of good stuff too if you like this. See ya.
No more second chances, no more.